acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 101, Season of Light. Sunday, December 13th, 2015. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yin Hu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. Each week, I post a blog post on my website, Yarns at Yin Hu, for the episode, and sometimes there is a well-developed blog post, but often I just put some photos and links to the things that I talk about. Thank you so much to everyone who has been in touch with encouragement and compliments about the podcast following the 100th episode. And congratulations to you if you made it through the entire very long podcast. In episode 100, I reviewed my year working with the Fibercraft Studio in the Sheep to Shawl course, and then I copied and pasted the segments I had done throughout the year at the end of the podcast. So I know some listeners are newer to the podcast, so that gives you kind of like a retrospective of the year. And I thought in episode 101, I would do a bit of reintroduction and talking a bit about the background to the podcast. The title Yarns at Yin Hu refers to the name of my home, which is Yin Hu Cha Yuan, Silver Lake Tea House. It's a replica of a Chinese tea pavilion, a quite rustic replica of a Chinese tea pavilion that was built near the Delaware River here in eastern Pennsylvania. The closest towns are Delaware Water Gap and Shawnee on Delaware. And it was not built as a home, it was built as a restaurant and gift shop. It did not even have an indoor staircase. So, and this was back in the early 1920s when a fascination with Chinese culture and design was quite prominent in the U.S. Over the years, this residence became a place where people stayed. It was converted to a single-family home very poorly in the 1970s. It was often left unoccupied for long periods of time, and so there was damage, graffiti. There were squatters living in the place, and we are, my partner Samuel and I, are the first folks to own this property and live in the building. And we have taken quite a lot of efforts to restore and repair this incredible historical place. It is not without its drawbacks. It is incredibly small, and it's built very close to the road, which was once a lovely, quiet country road, and is now sort of a shortcut between thoroughfares, and people drive way too quickly, in my opinion. And it is very difficult to record a podcast there. I did in the early days, and I was often frustrated by road noise picking up on the microphone. So over the past several months, I have gradually transitioned to recording in the rehearsal space of Samuel's band, Bovine Social Club. And I am pleased to say that I am now a bona fide renter of the space. And my practice for quite a few months now has been to record early on a Sunday morning when downtown Delaware Water Gap is so peaceful and tranquil. Almost no one is in this very old historic building. So it's just very quiet, and it's a great time to record the podcast. But I continue to talk about my home and the energy and power of Yin Hu on the podcast, and I plan to do that a little more in the episode today. So welcome, if you've been listening for a while, or if you have only recently become a listener of the Yarns at Yin Hu podcast, welcome and thank you so much for tuning in. There are conversations going on the Yarns at Yin Hu group on Ravelry. So if you are a knitter, crocheter, I encourage you to join the group over there. I know some of you who are listening are really not involved in fiber craft at all, but you enjoy listening. So I thank you so much. The Yarns at Yin Hu website is also a place where you could leave a note or comment, question or request. And I encourage you to do that if you'd like to be in touch. The back porch. I haven't felt like an incredibly productive knitter for the past several weeks. And one of the reasons is that I knit a little bit too much and too quickly on my sheep to shawl project and had a bit of a knitting related injury, I think. It hasn't been professionally diagnosed. I diagnosed myself. The yarn that I spun from the sheep to shawl course, you know, it was a little more rustic. It was a little bit thicker than what I'm used to knitting with. And I had a bit of a challenge in figuring out what gauge to use and which needles. I started with some bamboo needles because I like the feeling of bamboo with hand spun. But the knitting was kind of dragging on the needles, and it was starting to tire my hands quite a bit. I usually work with size, I guess it's typical for me to work with size 3 to 6 needles, and I was using size 9 needles for this yarn because I didn't want the project to be too dense, but the yarn is thick and it gets even thicker upon blocking. I switched to metal needles. The only pair of Chagu needles that I have are size 9s. I don't know why I have only, I really like those needles. And the knitting moved a little bit more quickly on the needles, but the poncho was large and took a lot of knitting. And I was working on it pretty quickly because I was excited about it. And the thumb of my right hand started to become very sore and then very swollen. And this didn't happen until I was nearly finished with the project. But I needed to take a break for about a week, and I didn't do that much knitting at all. I just iced my thumb. I took an anti-inflammatory a couple of times. And over the course of the week, you know, that really went away and my hand felt fine and I continued to work on some of my projects in progress. But that meant that I got really, really behind on the Miranda sweater for my youngest sister, Jessica, that I really planned to have done by December 1st. I am still working on that project. It's going well. I have finished the body, which includes a beautiful cabled front panel and a pouch pocket. So the whole thing, the way I'm knitting it, is to replicate a hoodie-style sweatshirt with a sweater. It's a beautiful, a little bit rustic worsted weight yarn from Battenkill Fiber Mill in a natural silvery gray color. It's really beautiful yarn. It will block out even more beautiful than it looks coming off the needles. And the design of this sweater, it doesn't really have any body shaping, although if you're an adept knitter, you could easily add some bust increases and waist shaping decreases. But in keeping with the hoodie style, I didn't do that. And I found that the cabled front panel, because it has a little bit of an hourglass shape to it, it gives the illusion of shaping of the garment without doing any actual shaping. I really enjoyed the way the pouch pocket in front is knit. I had a lot of anxiety about that, but when I came to it, the directions were extremely clear and I understood exactly what I was supposed to do. And now I'm working on the first sleeve. I'm about to start the ribbing for the cuff of the first sleeve. And so I have the second sleeve and the hood still to knit. I'm really, really happy that I purchased an additional skein of yarn for this project because I need it. I'm already using it to knit the first sleeve. Also, with yarn that's bought at a discount, so this is mill yarn purchased at a discount, and there's an expectation for imperfections in the yarn. I'm certainly finding them. There are a lot of knots where there were breaks in the yarn, so I'm just using a wet splicing technique to felt the two ends together and keep knitting. There's some inconsistency in the thickness of the yarn. It's still knitting up beautifully, not a problem. And I did encounter about a quarter of the third skein I was using was nearly unplied. It's for almost the last quarter of the skein, it's just, you know, the two plies next to each other, barely twisted. So I wound that off, wound it into a ball, and I think I could use that on the hood without doing anything to the yarn, and I think it would be fine. It's not a high wear. The hood is like the least wear area of the garment. So I think that would be fine. I could also put that on my wheel or a spindle and give it some ply and, you know, soak it and let that twist set into the yarn. And then I would have, you know, yarn that's in great shape to use. For now, I've just wound it and set it aside. It may turn out that I don't need to use that yarn for this project. And then I can just figure out what to do with it later. But it's definitely a good idea to buy extra yarn if you're not certain of the quality of the yarn. And, you know, not to get frustrated when you see imperfections and inconsistencies. I mean, that's why the yarn was such a great buy. So I'm still working on that. I'm not stressing about it at all. I feel fine that this will be done by Christmas. And because it's on a little bit larger needles, I'm working on it slowly. There's also just I don't often work on big projects, and it is an extra effort just to shift and maneuver the project as you're working on it, which takes a little more time and I think causes a little bit more knitting fatigue. So I'm just going slowly with that. In the meantime, I have completed a smaller project, which is the Suffragette. It's a hat from Pom Pom Quarterly by Olga Baraya Kefelian. And this hat is inspired by, you know, 1920s flapper style. I was moved to begin this on the day that I saw the film Suffragette, which, if you haven't seen it, don't know about it, is certainly worth a look. I enjoyed it very much. It's about the suffragette movement in East London. In many ways, the British movement is similar to events in the US. However, those British ladies were a great deal more militant than their American counterparts. I didn't know that much about it, and I think Suffragette, the film, is, it has great character development. It has great scenery in terms of life in East London and the lives of lower and middle class women workers and their plight. But it also has a lot of great historical information contained in it as well. So I thought the film was fantastic and I was really excited to knit this pattern. I was using the pattern to specifications, no alterations or changes, making the smaller size, and using yarn that I purchased from Battenkill Fiber Mill in a beautiful coppery brown color. I have knit the hat. I have soaked the hat and it's currently drying. I'm afraid it's too large. It's too soon for me to try it on to tell because it's still damp and I don't want to stretch it out any more than it already, if it's already too large, I don't want to stretch it. But it seems a little bit big when it came off the needles. I'm not sure. I don't own a dryer, so even though I might be tempted to just stick it in the dryer for a few tumbles, I can't really do that. I guess I could take it to a laundromat. I really think that the whole thing needs to be reknit on a one size smaller needle. Darn. But I really love the shaping of this hat. It begins flat. You're knitting it flat, and there's a series of three welts and short row shaping. And then you join the sides together and knit in the round, and there are some lovely crown decreases as well. I might try just ripping out the hat following the join because that goes rather quickly. It's those welts and all those short rows that take the longest amount of time. So if it's too big, I might try doing that first. Maybe it won't be too large. We'll see. I think a cloche should not be snug. It should really just sit around your head. It should not really mess up your hair either. So maybe my expectations for the hat need to be adjusted. I really enjoyed the short row shaping. I looked up techniques for picking up wraps and turns and learned some new techniques for that. So that was kind of an exciting new skill. I've done welts before. Stephen West often has welts in his designs, and they are tedious, but the effect is exquisite. So, you just put up with it and knit the welts. And this is a really clever, classy little design for a hat. So I'll have to tell you in the next episode how it worked out, if the hat is acceptable to be worn as is, or if it needs some additional work. The other project I have completed over the last few weeks is one called Fairies Firelight. And this is a pattern for a little lacy sleeve for a ball jar or a mason jar. You can knit it in pint size or quart size by Jen Sheelan. And the idea is that you turn a mason jar into a votive candle holder, and you have this beautiful lacy design on the outside. I saw this pattern on Ravelry and I couldn't stop thinking about how beautiful and special it would be to take one of my mason jars and put a candle inside and have this beautiful knitted design on the outside. It's just really, really simple, but it captured my imagination and I couldn't stop thinking about it. I had to get started on this project. I used US 1 DPNs and some Red Heart Stardust sock yarn. And this is a wool and acrylic yarn with a little bit of glitter in it. It's not my usual thing, but it's something I had in stash and I thought would be perfect for this pattern. And it is. I found that my gauge was a lot larger than the expectations of the pattern. I think it calls for US size 2. I think I could even knit this on size 0 needles. And someone else commented that they needed to go down to double zeros to really get an appropriate gauge. The lace design is sort of a candle flame pattern. I found it very relaxing and addictive to knit. There's a really nice bind off, and then I just slipped this little sleeve over a pint-sized mason jar and put a candle inside, and it's just a beautiful addition to my fireplace mantle. I found myself carrying this around and wanting to have this candlelight wherever I am in the house. It's like relaxing and therapeutic, and I absolutely love it. So once again, this is Fairies Firelight, a pattern by Jen Sheelan, and I just love it so much. The pattern contains directions for knitting both a pint size and a quart size. And I do recommend that you check your gauge, and if you are a loose knitter, to consider right away going down a needle size or two and using not just sock yarn, but almost like a light fingering, a very thin sock yarn for the pattern. White is beautiful. Something with a bit of glitter is beautiful. And you just put your candle in there and it's a great addition to your holiday season. Speaking of the holiday season, I thought I would talk a little bit this episode about how I like to celebrate the holidays. As much as I'm thinking about Christmas time, it has been very difficult to feel Christmassy because the weather here in the Northeast United States has been so unseasonably warm. Yesterday, the temperatures were in the high 60s. Today, I think it could be even warmer. We had a bit of a cold snap in mid-October. It was snowing in Rhinebeck, and there was snow here that weekend as well. And it seemed like, wow, winter's really going to settle in early. But then it didn't. It was in the 70s in early November. I was raking leaves in a tank top. And still, I mean, there's been frost. There has been a little bit of chilly weather, especially in the evening and the morning. But daytime temperatures keep climbing up into the 50s, into the 60s. And that is just so unusual. And it's so difficult to feel like Christmas is really on its way because it just doesn't feel like it at all. For us, the Christmas holiday starts on Thanksgiving Day. We have a tradition of cooking a Thanksgiving meal for friends and family. And at noon on a local radio station, everything stops and we listen to Alice's Restaurant in its entirety with a glass of red wine. And that is the beginning of Christmas. As soon as it's over, we say Merry Christmas, and Christmas music starts playing on the radio. And that's, you know, that really marks the beginning for me of the Christmas holidays. I am one of the people who do not like to see Christmas decorations before Halloween and, you know, just all throughout November. I find it really irritating to water down the holidays and spread the consumerism out that far. I don't like it. I just think it makes it less special to have it go on for so long. Following Thanksgiving, I enjoy doing a lot of mailing packages and writing Christmas cards and receiving packages and just planning and getting ready. I do like to make Christmas cookies, and today I think I will work on some gingerbread cookies. And I'd also like to revive a practice I had for a long time. I made Czech Christmas cookies with a college girlfriend of mine. She is since living in the Midwest, has a big family, and we don't get together to do that traditional baking anymore. She's much more skilled with the recipes than I am. But I do have some of her grandmother's recipes for just, I think I can handle a basic Linz dough in vanilla and chocolate. And you cut out very, very small shapes. And then you make a lot of creams to go on the inside and you decorate the cookies with chocolate and nuts. They are incredibly high calorie and very expensive cookies to make because you need to buy a lot of butter, chocolate, and nuts, and those things are very expensive. But these are so special and so unlike Christmas cookies that anyone makes in this area that I thought it would be nice, even if it's just a few batches, to make some of those cookies for this year. And I looked through my baking supplies and I don't have the appropriate cookie cutters. So I had to go online and find the best approximation of these cookie cutters that I could. The ones we used, her mother sent from Czech. So I don't even know where she sourced those. I did a lot of searching online and came up with something I think is pretty close. So hopefully that will work and those will arrive so that I can make the cookies in time for Christmas. We also have a tradition of, you know, really decorating our house with a live tree or a freshly cut tree, I guess I should say, and just lots of decorations. And since Yinhu is so small, we do a lot of undecorating before we decorate for Christmas. So we have a lot of things, textured, cultural objects, interesting artwork. Our house is sort of full of that. And we need to take some of it down and put it away in order to make room for the holiday decorations. It's not exactly the Griswolds, but it's pretty close. I just don't like to feel like things are crowded. I like to feel that I can appreciate the beautiful things that we have. And so in order to do that, I feel like, okay, let's clear away some of this. Let's give ourselves a break from looking at it for a while. And then in January, when we put it all back, it's like, oh, you know, here are these things again. So that takes quite a while. And since we haven't been feeling Christmassy, we don't have a tree. We still haven't decorated. I'm not sure when that will happen. Maybe the weekend before Christmas, which is very late and unusual, but maybe that's how it will go this year. One of my very favorite decorations is something we acquired last year, which is a smoking man. This is a German type Christmas figurine, and it opens up, and inside you put a cone of incense. And there's a hole in the mouth of this figurine, and the smoke of the incense comes through. That's the name, Smoking Man. And the beautiful, exquisite figurine that we purchased is this shepherd. He has a staff. He has this adorable little lamb at his feet. He has a fur pelt over his shoulder. And in his pocket in the back, he has a bottle of spirits for the cold nights watching sheep on the hill. And oh, it's just great. Oh, he's holding a pipe as well, of course. So I love this figurine so much. And even though we haven't decorated for Christmas yet, yesterday we spent the afternoon and evening in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, Christmas City, USA, to see the beautiful lights and do a bit of shopping. And when we came home, I dug out the smoking man and, you know, we did some incense and just enjoyed that decoration for a while. We also like to do some festive reading, and this year we've been reading from a book of letters called Father Christmas. And for about 20 years, J.R.R. Tolkien and his family received letters from Father Christmas. They were often accompanied by beautiful paintings of the scenes at the North Pole and the Christmas preparations that were there. And sometimes these letters were interjected by the great North Polar Bear, the number one helper and assistant of Father Christmas. And the great North Polar Bear was very accident prone. So a lot of crazy things would happen around Christmas time. And Father Christmas would narrate the story of how the great polar bear had messed something or other up and all the chaos that ensued. So for 20 years, Tolkien's children received these beautiful letters and paintings, and we have this lovely book that is a collection of the works of Tolkien. It's just extraordinary and exquisite to read through them and think about how magical these letters must have been for those children and how amazing it must have been to correspond with Father Christmas. So I've put a link in the show notes. There's a bit of this available online on like open source software, so you can see an example of what the handwriting looks like in some of the paintings. And it's a great book to have around for the holidays and just enjoy looking at it and reading aloud. And it really helps bring on the magical holiday spirit. I feel like the darkness of this time of year makes this season a season of light. And all of the Christmas lights and the twinkling lights, candles, that to me is one of the most special things, because we spend so much of this season immersed in darkness. So the fairies' firelight pattern and different lights that we put up and the wreath that we put up, that to me spreads the season of light and is really a special part of this time of year. Ever-expanding skill set. This month for hashtag Power Pantry, we are talking about cooking for particular numbers of people. Maybe in your household, you're always cooking for four, or you're cooking for one, or you're cooking for an extended family and there are 7, 8, 9 folks at your table. We're interested in sharing ideas for using leftovers, cooking on a budget. Also, this idea of cooking one time but having meals or ingredients for meals that last several days over the course of the week. Sourcing food, recipes that you use that are conducive to cooking for your family situation. And, you know, expanding our skill set. What can you try that's new? If you're like me, you have kind of a rhythm or a set pattern, and then sometimes you start to feel bored with what you're doing and you really need to liven it up a little bit. The hashtag Power Pantry thread on Ravelry is a great place to share and get ideas for your kitchen. And this week, I thought I'd share a little bit more about my expanding skill set because most often I cook for two. I usually cook for four and serve two. That's my method because I will take a hot lunch to work with me. And so I use the leftovers as my lunchtime meals. Sometimes I freeze the remainder, depends on what it is, so that, you know, I have a non-cook meal that I can take out of the freezer. Sometimes I cook more than enough components for the meal, and I don't make more of the dish itself, but I just refrigerate those cooked components. So let's say I'm sauteing onions, I might saute a lot of onions and then put some of those in the refrigerator so I can use them for another recipe without having to go through that step. This past week, I catered a buffet early dinner for about 40 people. And the Bovine Social Club had their annual holiday event, Jingle Jingle, at which they perform, but they also invite a number of other solo performers. There are readings as well as instrumental and song performances, and they invite a lot of guests. They also sell VIP tickets to this event, and the VIP guests are all invited to join the musicians and performers for a light meal before the show. And this is also great because, you know, the musicians can eat and, you know, they don't have to worry about doing that and the expense of doing that during the show. So the challenge was to plan a make-ahead meal, and it needed to be something, you know, that wasn't too high in fat or too crazy in flavor, because if you're going to perform, you really want something to just sit nicely in your system, and you don't want to encourage overeating. So I thought that a chili buffet might be a nice way. I was going with this kind of like south of the border Christmas idea. So I had turkey chili and vegetable chili, which is nice to make on a budget. And you don't have to make it too spicy, but I had extra hot sauce in case folks liked it a little more spicy. It's also a great way to satisfy, you know, omnivores as well as vegetarians. And vegetarian chili is also vegan in most cases. So you can satisfy a lot of folks with dietary restrictions. I made gluten-free cast iron skillet cornbread, and I have linked that recipe. I used a recipe in the cast iron skillet cookbook that I have, but I found a similar recipe online, so I've linked that. This is really fantastic recipe, and I had used it for Thanksgiving because I made cornbread for my cornbread stuffing using this cast iron skillet recipe. Then I had tortilla chips and salsa, a crudité platter, and also some cheese and crackers, and then I made the chocolate Aztec cookies that had just a little hint of heat in them to finish off the meal. So I learned a lot. I always learn a lot when I'm preparing something for a large group because you have to think about quantities in a way. I tend not to measure. So thinking about, will this really be enough for 40 people is a big challenge for me. There comes a point where you just can't eyeball it. Like, you really need to figure out your quantities and what people are likely to eat, how much, and make sure that there's enough. And then I needed to break down the preparation into stages. It's a lot of purchasing, so you really have to have a list. It's not like, you know, weeknight cooking where you can be like, oh, well, I forgot something at the store, I'll just substitute. If you don't have beans for your chili, there's really no substitute for that. And you don't want to be running back and forth to the store when you have all of this cooking prep to do. So you have to make lists and shop very carefully. And then you have to think about presentation, how you're going to set all of this food up so that people can really access it, see what it is. If they have dietary restrictions, they're going to be very concerned. So food needs to be labeled carefully and folks can choose for themselves. They need to be able to access it. It can't be too crowded. It can't be too spread apart. And there needs to be kind of a flow to the setup so that it doesn't, you know, it's already awkward enough serving yourself food and then sort of standing and sitting around eating it without everyone, you know, can't put 40 people at a dining table in most spaces. So how do you make it comfortable for people to consume that? There are a lot of things that need to be considered to make that happen. So it was a great challenge, and I always learn a lot when I do something like this. And of course, think a lot about, okay, how would I do it differently next time? This is an event that the band has every year. Sometimes it's catered by outside caterers, and you know, sometimes we pitch in. This time, I elected to do a lot of the preparation, and it can't be south of the border Christmas next year, so I would have to come up with a new concept for that. How are you expanding your culinary skill set? What's going on in your hashtag Power Pantry? I hope that you'll share your ideas on Ravelry or on other social media and pick up some tips and techniques from other listeners. Happy holidays, everyone.
Acorns are dropping off my Jenny's house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Leaves her down like a lady, waiting for a naked man. River bends like an elbow, turning stone to sand. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire. Just like Linda Curtis, burn out on a wire. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Thanks for listening. Music for this episode is Sweet. Music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Krista Long and Cesar Diaz. If you enjoyed today's episode, I hope you will consider liking the show's Facebook page, joining the Yarns at Yinhu group on Ravelry, or leaving a star rating or a review on iTunes. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine.